He's the chief executive at the Institute of Race Relations. He's a powerful voice for classical liberalism and a data-driven approach to solving our country's problems. Doesn't it just irritate you when the narrative, people have got ideas, everybody's got an opinion, like everybody's got, you know, that other thing. It is a never-ending source of aggravation to me when I'm forced to listen politely, because that's what we do. Everyone must have their say, to someone who's just blabbing. They haven't researched, they haven't read about it, but they've got an opinion. And we all got opinions, and there are 8 billion of us on this planet. And I can tell you, your opinion and my opinion are equal, unless we've researched it. That's not what John does. They're about data. They're about nearly 100 years of think tanking at the Institute of Race Relations. And they're about telling the truth. And they told the truth to power with the previous government. And they certainly have been telling the truth to power with this government. His path to leading one of South Africa's oldest think tanks was a distinctly international and multilingual one. He holds a doctorate in commerce and economics from one of Germany's leading business schools, the Otto Beisheim School of Management, and also has a master's degree in translation studies at WITS. His career has spanned work in the retail and services industries, as well as roles with the Friedrich Naumann Foundation in Germany, and as the founding CEO of Good Governance Africa. And Good Governance Africa are the guys who give us a list of the 230 municipalities in South Africa who are the best to the worst. So they were the first people to start analyzing the municipalities and how they're performing. And it's when you start, my really good friend Bernard Swanepoel always said, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And he was a miner, a gold miner, or he is a miner. And it's very similar in the public sphere as well. John's unique blend of experience in business, in nonprofits, and in the precise art of translation across different languages and cultures gives him a truly global and nuanced perspective on the challenges we face today. He's also, like any good liberal, prepared to listen to all sides of the story. He was with us, Rob kind of suggested that I go along to ARC because it's his people. You know, my people are in Davos, his people are at ARC. They're like the, you know, the side of them, we're in the middle. John was also at ARC earlier this year, and we had a fascinating conversation then as well. So it's a real privilege to welcome the chief executive of the Institute of Race Relations, Dr. John Endres. Thank you.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth. Building wealth and protecting legacies since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Good. Hello, everyone. Quite exciting to be here and to be making my debut. So thanks, Alec, for the invitation. And I hope to make myself unpopular today, because I think we've heard a great variety of very interesting analysis and opinions. I agree with much of it, but the conclusion I reach might not be the one that you're accustomed to hearing. So we've heard a lot about what's going wrong with South Africa, and everybody wants to know how we can put things back on track. And figuring that out and making it happen is the purpose of the organization I lead, the IRR, or the South African Institute of Race Relations. This kind of work is not new. The IRR was founded in 1929, so almost 100 years ago. And since then, generations of my predecessors, as well as our current cohort, have worked hard to understand South Africa, explain South Africa, and improve South Africa. So that's what we try to do. We try to understand, explain, and improve the country. Our aim ultimately is to make South Africa a beacon of freedom and prosperity in the world. So it's a very ambitious vision, but that's where we want to get the country to. In practical terms, today I want to talk to you about what we're observing in our politics and where things seem to be heading, and also about the thorny issue of transformation. I will argue today that South Africa desperately needs transformation. But the transformation we need is not the fake kind that the ANC is selling. Instead, what we need is real transformation. that hasn't been tried yet. So that's the title of my talk. Real transformation hasn't been tried yet. I'll also argue that by embracing real transformation, the ANC can save South Africa and save itself. And I will explain what I mean by that in due course. I'm going to start by talking about the state of the ANC. And I think it's obvious to everyone now that if the ANC wants to survive, it needs to get serious about saving itself. To give you just some examples, in its 2024 annual report, and we read most of the ANC documents, we read the Umrabulo reports, the annual reports, the speeches, the statements, and so on to understand what's going on with the party. You read the 2024 annual report, and that report mentions the word crisis no fewer than 20 times. And it even talks about an existential crisis of the ANC. Then you've got Senzo Mhlulo, the NEC member and former police minister, who recently warned that the ANC was on the brink of collapse. 2 weeks ago, you get Naledi Pandor, the ANC veteran and former international relations minister, saying, "We have lost our glory. Let us not pretend otherwise. People look at us with contempt, horror, and shame." Last week, Oscar Magunyane, the premier of the Eastern Cape and also the ANC chair in the Eastern Cape, said, "We are fighting for the soul of the ANC, for the survival of the movement, the concern, the worry within the party." It seems that nothing is going right for the party right now. Once again, ANC staff members are going unpaid, and the party is being taken to court for not paying its service providers. It is being hounded by its opposition on the left and harried by its opposition on the right. It is under pressure from the Trump administration. Its national dialogue is a farce, and it is about to embarrass itself and the country by hosting the world's most powerful leaders at the G20 summit in Johannesburg, a city collapsing under misgovernance from the council led by the ANC. Municipal elections, we know, are coming up in under 18 months, and opinion polls are showing that ANC support continues to slide. The party dropped by 17 points to 40% or 39% in last year's national election. And in the first quarter of 2025, it was polling at around 30% nationally in an IRR poll, as well as a poll by Frans Cronje's Social Research Foundation, the SRF. In June, it had recovered to 40% in SRF polling, but in August, DA polling found it at below 30% nationally again. So the trend lines are pointing down for the ANC. At the same time, the economy is tanking. So you've got these stories of job losses, of companies downscaling or closing, and those stories are coming in fast and furious. ArcelorMittal, Ford, Goodyear will all be shedding jobs, adding to the unemployment queue. There are already over 8 million people out of work in South Africa. And if you put them all in a line, 1 meter apart from one person to the next, that queue would stretch from the union buildings in Pretoria to the pyramids of Gizeh in Cairo. That's how many unemployed people there are in South Africa. That's a total disaster. And it's not surprising when you poll South Africans and you ask them, what's the biggest problem that the government needs to solve? Most of them say they want, like, the jobs crisis, unemployment has to be addressed. We need a solution to that. Why is unemployment so high? We've heard a bit about that from other speakers. It's because growth is low. So it's averaged below 1% since 2012 and came in at 0.5% in 2024. On Tuesday, we had the latest GDP figures, and they show barely any movement, with the economy growing by just 0.6% from the second quarter of 2024 to the second quarter of 2025. So the economy is basically flatlining. Why is our economic growth rate so low? It's abysmal because our rate of fixed investment is puny. Now, we've had several speakers talk about that. It's below 15% of GDP, and the global average is 26%. So it's not actually emerging markets that are 26%. The entire global average is 26%, and we're only at 15. Many emerging markets are at 30% or even above 30%, 34, 35%. We're very far removed from that. What is that number, that 15%? So it's fixed investment, which is the money that companies, individuals, and the government spend on things like factories, heavy machinery and equipment, roads, rail, and ports. So it's the physical assets which an economy needs to produce goods and transport them to their buyers. This type of investment shrunk by 1.4% in the quarterly GDP update released on Tuesday. So if you put all of these things together, what you see is that the ANC is now at a risk not just of gradual decline, but of sudden collapse. And I think this is a point worth emphasizing. So you've heard a bit about this already, and we've kind of, I think, started to price in the idea of ANC decline. I want to go a bit further and urge you to consider the possibility of ANC collapse. And why is that? So that doctorate I did in Germany was about change management. And one of the things that I learned is that social processes often unfold in a way that is described as a punctuated equilibrium. And that means things are stable and in equilibrium for a long time. Like in South Africa, the ANC keeps winning elections and everybody knows where they stand. But then the equilibrium is punctuated and all of a sudden things start changing very rapidly. The ANC drops below 40% and then just keeps dropping. So think of the fall of communism in the early 1990s. After World War II, Germany was divided into two countries, West Germany, which was capitalist and prosperous, and East Germany, which was communist and poor. It seemed like that was how things were always going to be. But then on a cold November night in 1989, Germans started tearing down the wall that had divided them, culminating in the reunification of Germany a year later. Once a social system, like a political party, for example, is hollowed out on the inside, like the East German government was, it collapses rapidly under pressure from the outside. And this is an emperor has no clothes moment. An institution once imbued with great authority, when stripped of its legitimacy and trappings of power, looks vulnerable and becomes an object of ridicule. And this is what's happening to the ANC now. Think of that famous scene of the Romanian communist dictator Nicolae Ceausescu giving his last speech from the balcony of the Central Committee of the Communist Party building. I encourage you to go watch it on YouTube. You see him standing on the balcony and he's expecting the crowds which are gathered in the large square below to cheer him, and he's expecting adulation, but he gets booed and he can't figure out what's going on. He sort of recoils and looks to the side and wonders what's happening. And what had happened, of course, is that the world had changed and he had missed it. So he ended up overthrown and was executed by firing squad on Christmas Day, 1989. Just this past week now, there's an uprising in Nepal that has led to the communist government being chased out of office. And in Nepal, a Marxist-Leninist communist party and a Maoist communist party have been alternating in power for the past 17 years. So entirely unexpectedly, the result has been massive corruption, nepotism, poor governance, and weak economic performance. We ask ourselves, what could possibly have gone wrong? Now, the ANC is watching this, and they must be watching nervously. Right? If it weren't for South Africa's functioning democracy and protection of civil liberties, which is our safety valve, then the ANC would now be at distinct risk of suffering the same fate. Its authority, its credibility, its legitimacy are being questioned, and the voices expressing their anger at the party are getting louder. So I wrote a piece for Business Day, and unfortunately they didn't use the title which I proposed, which was "The Whispers Are Getting Louder." But even at this conference, you could hear it. You could hear the whispers getting louder about the weakness of the ANC, and that's very dangerous for the party. We can visit the Facebook page of the ANC and look at the comments under the posts, and some recent examples are, "When I see ANC, I just feel like I'm also a foreigner in my country." Or, "Our brothers and sisters faced apartheid forces head on. For what, maybe? Zero commitment to the country." Or, "How can you renew an old, dead fossil?" So even people who are interested in the ANC and sort of, you know, wanted to do well are now being very critical. They're really falling out of love with the party. So far, the ANC's response to this has been bluster and a dogged determination to keep going down the ruinous, fossilized path that has brought it to this point. The party misses no opportunity to reaffirm its commitment to the National Democratic Revolution, and that is a program designed to turn South Africa first into a socialist and then into a communist state. And my senior colleague, Anthea Jeffrey, wrote a book about this, Countdown to Socialism, and I encourage you to read it. If you think this is all sort of historical and, you know, that happened in the past, you read the ANC's media statement on its August 2025 NEC meeting. It's a month ago. And they write, "Successive generations of party leaders have always affirmed that the route to socialism will traverse and be approached through the National Democratic Revolution led by the National Liberation Movement." So that commitment remains in place. You mustn't think that that's gone away. That's still there. A more recent document, which is called the NGC base document, which sets out the ANC's thinking ahead of its 2025 National General Council meeting, says, quote, "South Africa is at a crossroads with the possibility of either renewal and reinvigoration, or decline and total defeat of the revolution. Ironically, of course, it is only the defeat of the revolution that can halt and reverse the decline of the country. The NDR program has been based on the premise that the ANC is the very embodiment of South African society, its anointed leader, its protector and savior, its responsible guardian and steward. But what happens if that assumption no longer holds true? The ANC is now a 40% party, and if you measure its share of 39, if you measure its share of the vote as a share of all eligible voters, just 16% of eligible voters supported it in the 2024 elections. 6.5 million people out of 35 million eligible voters. So both in terms of public perception and also actual performance, the ANC's view of itself no longer accords with reality. As external belief in the party starts draining away, so does its self-belief. The people inside the ANC no longer believe that the party can survive. You'd read those statements earlier. As this starts happening, it starts making more and more mistakes, like the National Dialogue, for example. And ultimately, it's going to reach a point where even if the party does something well, like if it thinks of a good reform or is something that even this audience would approve of, it's going to be rejected because the ANC brand has become so toxic and nobody is going to believe that anything that comes out of the ANC could possibly be any good. And that is a really great threat for them. So what happens next? I think we have to look at the local government elections. That's sort of a really big milestone coming up. They will take place between the 2nd of November 2026 and the 31st of January 2027. So there's a three-month window, and somewhere in that time, those elections are going to take place. This is a make-or-break election for the ANC, and here is why. South Africa's three leading provinces by population and also by economic output are Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Western Cape. By population, so these are some useful numbers to know. 25% of South Africans live in Gauteng, a quarter of the entire population of the country. 20% live in KZN, and 12% live in the Western Cape. That means that in total, 57% of the entire South African population lives in just those three provinces. Economically, these provinces carry even greater weight, and here the numbers are as follows. So Gauteng, 33% of GDP. So one-third of all the economic output of the entire country comes out of Gauteng. KZN is at 16% and the Western Cape at 14%. So you add those together and it's 63% of South Africa's total economic output. Almost two-thirds of everything that our economy produces comes out of just those three provinces. Now look at the politics. So the ANC lost control of the Western Cape to the DA in 2009. In KwaZulu-Natal, it was relegated to third place in the 2024 elections, but remains the provincial government as a junior coalition partner in a four-party coalition. However, it is likely to suffer further losses in that province in the local government elections, as we heard both from Franz and also Prince Moshele. But Gauteng is where it gets really interesting. I'm really interested by that. Here, the ANC remains in control of the provincial government. It holds 28 of 80 seats in the provincial legislature and governs as part of a 32-seat minority coalition with tacit EFF support. So they're still running things, even though they haven't got a majority. By themselves, not even in that weird coalition they've got. It's also wrested control of the metro councils of Johannesburg, Tswane, and Ekurhuleni from opposition parties, and now governs these three metros. So it's controlling the metros as well. But in the elections next year, 2027, the prospect exists that it could lose control of all three metros. And a recent DA poll found that the DA was comfortably leading the ANC in Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, and Tswane. Of course, it's still a long way to go to the elections, but structurally, there's nothing that gives any indication that the ANC's vote share is going to improve. That was also Prince Moshele's point. Service delivery is collapsing across Johannesburg, where I stay, and residents are beyond disgusted with the council's underperformance, ineptitude, and corruption. The frustration is so great that Helen Ziller's mooted candidacy for the mayor of Johannesburg was greeted enthusiastically even by habitual critics of the DA. So that shows you how much things are changing. What this means is it's not unreasonable to assume that the ANC could lose control of the Gauteng metros and their 14 million inhabitants and almost a third of the economy. And this would be a blow from which the party would find it very hard to recover, just as it has been unable to find a path back to power in the Western Cape. So what options does the ANC have if you're trying to think from its perspective? And in my view, the ANC now has just the choice of bending or breaking. Bending means giving up some of its most cherished principles and instruments, such as heavy-handed state interventionism, race-based laws, the centralization of power, cadre deployment, rejection of the merit principle, and a distaste for accountability. These are the bedrocks of the fake transformation the ANC has been pursuing for three decades. Only by moving away from fake transformation can the ANC create tangible results that will reverse its declining legitimacy, and with that, its dwindling voter support. The alternative, if it doesn't do that, the alternative for the ANC is to break. This means holding on to its fake transformation and NDR values. In this case, outcomes will continue to worsen and support for the ANC will continue to drop. And as the party writes in its NGC-based document, quote, that our country's poverty and inequality indicators have moved in the wrong direction is not only a socioeconomic crisis, it is a political catastrophe for the ANC. And on this, they're 100% correct. This means that it is the voters who will break the ANC if the ANC does not change. By the time of the 2034 elections, it could be a 10% party. Even before that, by the time of the 2029 elections, the ANC could have dropped so far that it could not even cobble together a majority with the EFF and MK. That's how dire things are now. There can be no doubt if the ANC wants to survive, it must abandon fake transformation and embrace real transformation instead. Real transformation is the kind you can read from a steeply rising GDP graph. Real transformation is where incomes are rising, unemployment is falling, and where parents know that a bright future awaits their children. So what does this mean for you? As voters, business people, investors, it means in a sense you can relax. If the ANC bends, South Africa's policy environment starts improving, the economy starts growing, and things start getting better. If the ANC doesn't bend, it breaks, and you get your wish. The ANC is removed from power. But be careful what you wish for. A collapsing ANC is dangerous for South Africa. The party would resort to ever more extreme versions of the NDR, more state intervention, more regulation, more race-based laws, more threats to property rights, in an effort to reassert its power. It would be more tempted to get into bed with MK and the EFF to shore up its support. It would leave a vacuum in the place where the DA needs a centrist partner to work with to introduce reforms that can make the economy grow. It would accelerate corruption and looting as cronies and cadres sense that their time at the feeding trough is coming to an end. It would increase factionalism in the party and increase the risk of social instability and violence. Of course, we're seeing all of these things already. It would leave the central government less able to perform its responsibilities and would make it harder for South Africa to remain a unitary state. Balkanization would beckon. It would mean weakening institutions, weaker rule of law, even weaker property rights protections, leading to higher transaction costs and a less competitive economy. It would make it more tempting for the party and its radical peers to abandon democracy, limit freedom of speech, and curtail civil liberties. For all these reasons, I believe it is in the interests of South Africa that the ANC bend and survive rather than break and go under. I'm almost calling for a Save the ANC movement to be started. And of course, that is in its own interest as well. In the final few seconds, what can you do as individuals, as members of the community? Well, you can amplify this message. So speak up to explain how the ANC has the choice of bending or breaking. Emphasize how bending is better for the ANC and the country, of course, than breaking. If you're a company owner or CEO, say that you fully support transformation when it is real transformation. Say loudly that where you comply with fake transformation rules like the Harsh Employment Equity Act, you do so under duress and under protest, and the knowledge that you are harming your company and your country. Express your disgust with fake transformation and proclaim real transformation as the greatest thing since sliced bread. As Andre de Rota said yesterday, our first, second, and third priority must be economic growth, and that is the IRR's focus. We've developed a whole program of action around that, which you can find on our website. But let me close there because I've run out of time. Thank you.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's leading boutique wealth manager. Trusted to guide families for over 20 years. Invest better with Brenthurst.